loneliness vanishes and we become strong in our numbers.
So one of the things about this event is not only the critique of fascism, but developing the strategies on dealing with it. And what do you think are among the most important global strategies in this last 30 seconds?
Think one is to recognize that it's a global problem. And to see this as something that's happening through the rise of strongmen everywhere, right? The expulsion of immigrants and escaping, the hatred of women and the destruction of our rights and LGBTQ, the erasing of history, the religious nationalism. And I think one of the greatest strategies, I think, is educating ourselves, knowing what it is. I often bring up the world and people don't know what fascism is. So part of this day is, what is it? And once we know what it is, then we begin to know how to deal with it and how to create an alternative to it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. V, playwright formerly known as Eve Ensler, founder of V-Day and 1 Billion Rising, the event at the Judson Memorial Church in the Village on Saturday, How We Do Freedom, Rising Against Fascism. That does it for our show. We have job openings. You can check them out at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable team. Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Gusder, Sharif Delgadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warner, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Hannah Elias, our executive director, Julia Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
Independence. Not being subject to another's authority or jurisdiction. Grassroots. The common or ordinary people. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and September 21st to donate and help us reach our $30,000 fall membership drive goal to wake up the neighborhood.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the special membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News... New reporting from ProPublica shows gas utility Northwest Natural misled Oregonians on renewable natural gas.
Traffic in Portland metro area is the seventh worst in the nation.
And unionized Boeing workers take to the picket line, striking for a better contract.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 13th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Northwest Natural, Oregon's largest natural gas company, promised to move to greener, renewable natural gas. But the gas they pump to Oregon homes is less than 1% from renewable sources. That's according to new reporting from ProPublica. Renewable natural gas comes from decomposing organic waste from places like landfills and dairy farms. Theoretically, they could be used to replace the fossil fuels Oregonians are dependent on. Northwest Natural worked hard to sell the state legislature and Oregonians on this in 2017, and they were largely successful. But documents show that the gas utility has not switched to renewable sources and in fact misled the public and legislators about their capacity to do so. Before the legislative push, gas utilities and their lobbyists created a plan to embrace renewable natural gas just as climate activists were gaining ground on electrification and pulling consumers away from fossil fuels. There was a big advertising push, the Less We Can campaign. Former State Rep. Phil Barnhart told ProPublica, quote, "The story they're telling us is simply not possible. What they're trying to do is prevent being put out of business," end quote. The state laws they helped pass have little in the way of enforcing or monitoring the promise to convert to renewable gas. The article reads, quote, "The utility has followed a course that other companies, especially energy companies, have taken in the face of public pressure. A loud embrace of environmental goals, then a complicated, often unproven solution, then a continuation of the status quo if and when that solution falls short." End quote.
Traffic in Portland metro area ranks among the worst in the nation, according to a new report. Consumer Affairs ranks Portland seventh worst after Los Angeles, D.C., Seattle, San Francisco, New York City, and Denver. They analyzed three main factors: traffic congestion, travel times, and fatal crashes. Portland is in the top four for worst traffic congestion durations, at 6 hours, 36 minutes of congestion a day on average. But commute time in Portland is an average of 25 minutes, which puts the Rose City in the bottom third of the 49 cities the study looked at. Portland's fatal crashes also ranks comparably lower to other large cities in the U.S., 10 per 100,000 people. That puts Oregon's largest city at 31st on the list. Traffic deaths have been rising in Portland, with 2022 being the deadliest year on record. So far, there have been 44 traffic-related deaths since the beginning of 2024.
Unionized machinists at Boeing in Oregon and Washington are on strike today after voting to reject a tentative agreement and approve a strike. 33,000 total workers are on strike, with 1,000 workers on strike in Oregon. Union leaders and Boeing negotiators had reached a tentative agreement for a new contract, but it was rejected by 94% of workers. They say they're fed up with stagnant wages, as the cost of living in the Pacific Northwest has increased dramatically due to inflation since their last contract. They're asking for pay raises of 40% over the next 3 years, a restoration of pension benefits, and for better quality and safety assurances. It's been a tough year for Boeing. Only a few months ago, a door plug was sucked out of the plane in midair over Portland. So far, management negotiators say they're eager to get back to the bargaining table. Locally, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, District W24, are asking the community to sign a petition to stand with the workers and join their 24/7 picket lines.
The nation's debate over reproductive health care access took a major turn Thursday when a court struck down North Dakota's abortion ban. As politicians share their views on the campaign trail, the fallout in North Dakota is being assessed. Mike Mohn reports.
In the near future, abortion care restrictions in North Dakota are expected to be lifted. That's after a monumental court ruling on Thursday. The state judge said North Dakota's ban on the procedure, part of a wave of abortion laws that stemmed from the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs case, violates the state's constitution. Prior to this week's decision, the state's lone abortion provider moved its clinic just across the border to Minnesota. But Dr. Ana Tobias, an obstetrician and gynecologist in Bismarck, says physicians in hospital settings had been weighed down by uncertainties about what to do in cases of medical exceptions under the law.
We have been made to choose between saving a patient's life and possibly facing jail time.
Tobias, a plaintiff in the case, says while there are no more abortion clinics in North Dakota, hospitals can at least step in during pregnancy complications without legal ramifications getting in the way. Advocates say some procedural steps are needed before the ruling goes into effect. North Dakota's attorney general criticized the opinion, vowing to file an appeal. Those behind the legal challenge to North Dakota's ban say while Thursday's outcome provides hope, it would be hard to quickly build up a system of abortion care within state boundaries. In the meantime, Mitra Medizadev of the Center for Reproductive Rights says women around the state at least have some peace of mind about their reproductive care needs.
The court has reaffirmed the fundamental right to make personal and private health care decisions without interference from the government.
The Republican-led legislature reconvenes early next year, and depending on what happens with the expected appeal, the plaintiffs urge lawmakers to let this week's decision stand. The group North Dakota Right to Life says the judge in this case unilaterally issued a ruling that, quote, dismantles critical protections for the unborn and vulnerable women across the state. This is Mike Mohn for Prairie News Service.
Congress has a little more than 2 weeks to approve a new funding plan to keep the federal government running. Recent debate has included talk of possible cuts to some programs and agencies. Consumer protection advocates hope key work in their area isn't targeted for funding reductions in any final draft. Mike Moen has more in Wisconsin.
Even in a stable economy, consumers in Wisconsin and elsewhere still express pessimism. Advocates say a key federal agency working on issues like unfair business practices can't risk losing resources needed to help those consumers. To avoid a government shutdown, Congress has to approve a new federal budget by month's end. Over the summer, House Republicans floated cuts in certain areas, including a 27% funding decrease for the Federal Trade Commission. Aaron Witte of the Consumer Federation of America says the timing couldn't be worse for that type of move.
We've seen people talk a lot about feeling like their costs are increased in lots of ways. And the FTC's work is really aimed at trying to lower a lot of those costs to bring some fairness back to the process.
Last month, the agency co-hosted the first meeting of a task force about whether companies are price gouging and the impact on consumers. GOP leaders on the Appropriations Committee say they want a financial services bill that prioritizes combating terrorism financing, maintaining the integrity of financial markets, and spurring small business growth. Witte contends the FTC has made progress in standing up for consumers with great efficiency. She points to the proposed click-to-cancel rule that would remove barriers for people worried about recurring charges for an unwanted subscription for a service or product.
That would make it as easy for someone to cancel a subscription as it is to sign up for it. And that proposal has gotten thousands of comments from consumers about how much time they are wasting on things like unnecessary subscriptions.
And the state-level organization Opportunity Wisconsin has also cited concerns about consumer protections being gutted. It calls on Congress to pass clean funding bills without extreme provisions that would, quote, hurt Wisconsin families. It's unclear if any of the budget ideas floated over the past several months will find their way into a final spending plan. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
Marjorie Taylor Greene condemns remarks by a right-wing activist. Immigrants to Ohio spark conspiracy theories and heated campaign controversies. And the Children's Defense Fund pushes for more attention to child poverty. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Her rhetoric and her tone is does not match the base, does not match MAGA, does not match most Republicans I know. And I'm completely denouncing it. I'm over it. And I would encourage anyone else that matches her statements to stop.
Right-wing Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene calls a social media post by right-wing activist Laura Loomer extremely racist. Loomer wrote that if Vice President Kamala Harris, whose mother was from India, were elected president, the White House would smell like curry. Her controversial post came as Loomer was attending a 9/11 memorial with former President Donald Trump. Loomer has a history of controversial remarks and repeating conspiracy theories, including some about 9/11. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre pointed to that.
Maybe we should not have leaders who fall for fake internet conspiracy theories. We should think about that. Maybe we should not have leaders who do that.
Meanwhile, Trump's statement during the debate that Haitian immigrants are eating pets in Springfield, Ohio, is drawing a stiff rebuke from the state's Republican governor. Mike DeWine is repeating what others have said, that there is no truth to the claim.
This is something that came up on the internet, and the internet can be quite crazy sometimes. And look, the mayor, Mayor Rue of Springfield says, no, there's no truth in that. They have no evidence of that at all.
Thursday morning, officials closed Springfield City Hall in response to an emailed bomb threat. The FBI is investigating threats made to multiple buildings, although it is not clear what the exact connection to Trump's remarks about the Haitians is. Nathan Clark's son died last year in a car crash with a Haitian immigrant who was using an invalid license. The same day as the debate, Clark told the Springfield City Council he didn't want his son's death used as a political argument.
I wish that my son, Aiden Clark, was killed by a 60-year-old white man. But if that guy killed my 11-year-old son, the incessant group of hate-spewing people would leave us alone. Using Aiden as a political tool is reprehensible.
Meanwhile, Laura Relliford with the Children's Defense Fund says it's frustrating that child poverty is not a bigger part of the discussion. The Senate rejected an expansion of the child tax credit in spite of some bipartisan support. Relliford says if voters and political leaders were talking about child poverty, they would see there are real solutions.
That at this point, childhood poverty is a policy choice. The folks that have the power to do it know and have seen the evidence, and they haven't done it.
A judge in Georgia has dismissed three counts in the state election interference case against former President Trump and his allies while upholding the central racketeering charge. Trump now faces 8 felony counts, down from 13, with further proceedings on hold due to appeals over the district attorney's role. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $30,000 by September 21st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, KBOO presents Running on Air. On this episode, KBOO's Lenita Duke interviews Portland City Commissioner and mayoral candidate Mingus Mapps. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a small chance of rain with a high of 72. Today in history, in 2007, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was adopted by the United Nations. It identified the individual and collective rights of indigenous peoples, including rights to cultural and ceremonial expression. 4 countries voted against the non-binding resolution: the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Since this passage, all 4 states have moved to endorse the declaration informally. The quote of the day is from American politician Henry Fonda Ashurst, who said, quote, "A speech is entertaining only when serenely detached from all information," end quote.
New Alaska legislation is intended to address missing and murdered Indigenous people. Advocates say it's a step in the right direction. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New policies aimed at addressing missing or murdered Indigenous persons will soon be enacted statewide in Alaska after legislation was recently signed into law. The bill expands resources and training for law enforcement across the state and is drawing praise from a longtime MMIP advocate. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
The legislation establishes a new MMIP Review Commission, a 9-member body responsible for reviewing unsolved MMIP cases and submitting reports to the Alaska Legislature. The commission includes seats for representatives from victim advocacy and Alaska Native tribal organizations. Deila Johnson, an advocate and organizer with the Village of Solomon, said the creation of the commission is a much-needed step toward addressing the crisis.
At the state level, there was just not a lot of discussion or acknowledgement in addressing any of the overwhelming statistics surrounding the issues facing Indigenous populations, specifically women and young girls.
The bill also mandates Indigenous cultural training for new police officers in Alaska. The training will be especially impactful in rural communities like Nome, where the police department recruits officers that only live in the community while serving their 2-week rotations. Johnson believes the cultural training will help officers deepen their understanding of the people that they serve.
You know, they're on and off without any real sensitive training to the people that they're protecting, understanding, and needing to work into the different culture and lifestyles of the people.
The bill also requires the Department of Public Safety to file a missing persons report to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. They need to do so within 60 days of a report being filed at the local level. The DPS will also employ at least 2 full-time MMIP investigators. While Johnson acknowledges the bill is a step in the right direction, she hopes that the momentum won't stop here.
I really would hope that this is going to continue to generate the awareness surrounding these issues, keep the conversation going, and allow for additional partners, like potential partners, to jump in and build additional resources.
The new law will take effect on January 1st, 2025. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
Apache Stronghold, a coalition of Apache people and their allies, has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to protect Oak Flat in Arizona from mining by Resolution Copper. This week, the group formally filed its appeal to the High Court after the full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals refused to rehear the group's case, Apache Stronghold versus the U.S., in May. Earlier this year, a panel of 11 judges on the appeals court narrowly ruled against the group. Oak Flat is sacred to Western Apache and other Native people who say the proposed copper mine violates religious freedom. Apache people and their allies hosted a day of prayer outside the Supreme Court on Wednesday. Dr. Winsler Nosey Sr. of Apache Stronghold says Oak Flat is their Mount Sinai, and he's praying the justices will protect their place of worship. Resolution Copper says the project will supply copper, create jobs, and boost Arizona's economy. Resolution Copper told KJZZ News the case does not present any question worthy of Supreme Court review. The Supreme Court will first have to agree to consider the case. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Office of Tribal Government Relations, the Muscogee Nation of Oklahoma, and the Eastern Oklahoma VA Medical Center are hosting a homeless veteran stand down. The event next week on the Muscogee Nation will focus on assisting homeless veterans across Eastern Oklahoma. A number of services will be provided, including health care, disability benefits, free legal aid, and Social Security. According to the VA, many veterans are unaware they could be eligible for benefits. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A sanctuary for stargazing in Oregon is the largest in the world and is set to get even bigger. In eastern Oregon, the organization Dark Sky International declared 2.5 million acres of the Oregon Outback International Dark Sky Sanctuary in the first phase of its process in March. It plans to increase the sanctuary to more than 11 million acres in the next few years. Damon Mott's story is the Oregon State Chapter Director of the Sierra Club and recently visited the area.
Anybody who's visited it on a clear summer night or otherwise will agree that it is very spectacular. It's a very unique and amazing place to stargaze and get into astronomy.
Mott's story says the area is far from urban centers like Portland and Boise, sparsely populated, and it's estimated that more than 2.5 times as many stars are visible than in urban areas. Dark Sky International has designated sanctuaries since 2007. The Oregon Outback is the first in the state. Mott's story says protecting dark areas is good for wildlife and humans alike because both are affected by artificial lighting.
These kinds of designations help to spread awareness around people preserving the dark sky for both wildlife and human enjoyment, and also to serve as a little bit of a warning signal to future development to say, hey, this is really worth preserving.
Within the Oregon Outback is an area known as the Owyhee Canyonlands. However, Mott's story notes Congress has been unable to pass protections for this unique landscape. A coalition of organizations, including Mott's Stories, are pushing the Biden administration to declare it a national monument.
That would pair very nicely with this dark sky designation and help to protect everything that's on the ground around the Owyhee Canyonlands, which is just as special as the sky you look up at.
That was Damon Mott's story from the Sierra Club.
Climate change could expand the range of disease-carrying mosquitoes. Longer summers and more rain provide ideal conditions for the insects. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Mosquitoes are not just a nuisance. They can also be a public health risk, and many areas are now seeing more of them, and even species they haven't seen before, like Aedes albopictus, which can spread diseases like dengue, chikungunya, and lacrosse virus. Davidson Hamer is a public health researcher at Boston University.
Aedes albopictus has spread from the southern part of the U.S. gradually all the way up into New England and even into Ontario.
A warming climate could allow these and some other disease-carrying species to spread even farther. And as climate change brings longer summers and more rain, mosquitoes could also have more of the warm, wet habitats they love to breed in. Hamer says people can protect themselves by using bug spray, installing window screens, and eliminating standing water near their homes.
Discarded tires or even potted plants, anywhere where there's a little sort of residual stand of water that could potentially serve as a breeding site.
He also says public health officials should monitor these mosquito populations and the diseases they can carry, so communities can prepare for emerging health risks in a changing climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
A new study addresses the way climate change-related crop and financial losses are increasing global food insecurity. Both are also on the rise nationwide, says a new USDA report. It suggests farm bill programs are part of the solution. Deborah Van Fleet has more in Nebraska.
A new study addresses the major impact severe weather events worldwide have had on crops, from lost income and higher food prices to rising levels of hunger. The report says this is especially true in low- and middle-income countries that rely heavily on farming. But food insecurity is also on the rise in Nebraska and nationwide, according to the USDA. Nationwide, the agency says over a million more Americans were food insecure in 2023 than in 2022. Eric Saviano with Nebraska Appleseed says the data shows a marginal increase in food insecurity in Nebraska, as it has in the past 2 years.
There's more people who do not know where their next meal is coming from, and there's more people who don't have the food that they need. It's worse for people who are Black and who are Hispanic, and it's worse for families with kids.
The study identifies a number of U.S. policies that could strengthen global food security. Several focus on women, whom the study says are disproportionately affected. Programs that bolster maternal nutrition and support women in agriculture, including increasing their access to capital, are among the recommendations. Katie Lee with the Farm Journal Foundation says farm bill programs can address several of the study's recommendations, including innovative ag programs and global trade practices. And she says people should find it unacceptable for anyone to be hungry in this world.
If you're hungry, you're going to do just about anything you need to do to feed yourself and your family. Especially if you are a mom, you will go hungry yourself to feed your child.
The farm bill has languished in Congress and is just now getting new attention. Saviano says its nutrition programs are crucial for many Nebraska families, but he doubts a new bill will be agreed upon before the election. Over three-fourths of the funding in the last farm bill was for mandatory nutrition programs.
During COVID, we saw lots of families get the support they needed from kind of robust public supports and new programs that helped out. But anything we can be doing to support families as this food insecurity creeps up is really important, especially on the national level.
6% of Nebraska families reported very low food security from 2021 to 2023, compared with just over 5% of families nationwide. For Nebraska News Connection, I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
Now we go to Pearl Stark for the Point Puzzle, the weekly radio brain teaser produced by KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle involves a type of year and a different musical scales.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week we had a Labor Day traffic puzzle. If you're driving 60 miles an hour and your heart beats 60 times per minute, then counting 60 heartbeats gets you 1 mile. So if you drive 65 miles per hour and your heart beats 65 times per minute, will it be more or fewer beats to get to a mile? Well, the answer is that it's exactly the same. It will still be 60 beats to 1 mile. Our winner this week is Adam Souflaris. I hope I got your name right. At WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Baby, you can drive my For the new puzzle, I'm looking for an 8-letter word for a type of year starting now. It can be spelled with 6 letters of the Western scale, A through G, plus 1 note from the solfège scale, Do, Re, Mi. So again, I'm looking for an 8-letter word for a type of year starting now. It is spelled with 6 letters of the Western scale, A through G, plus 1 note from the solfège scale, which is the Do, Re, Mi scale. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpoe.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Years may come, many years are still ahead. Years may go, many years.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of September 9th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 13th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer and engineer for tonight's broadcast is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Pearl Stark, Farah Siddiqui, Mike Moen, Deborah Van Fleet, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned for Counterspin.